Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Press Coverage here on the Going for Two Live Network. I'm your host, Kyle Senra, and my guest this time around is Luke Patrick from the All About Reality podcast, and which podcast for the Reality Sports Online website, as Luke has indicated on the video. So be sure to head over to the YouTube page to come check out this conversation. But Luke, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. So good to see you again, Kyle. And yeah, it's fun playing with you in the Reality Friends of Reality podcast league. And so we have more familiarity. We've made some trades. We get to try to spice things up there. Yeah, just happy to be here tonight. Thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I love the Reality Sports Online format. So of course, I'm blessed anytime I get the chance to talk to anyone who is familiar with the format. And I'm sure that that'll definitely come up later on in the episode. But yeah, you fill a unique position as a teacher. And this season on Press Coverage focuses a lot on teachers. So I've had Kevin Coleman, Matt Renshaw in previous episodes. So welcome on. And maybe you teach us a thing or two today.
Hey, I'll do my best, right? You're a more captive audience than the actual students that I have in front of you. So that's a good start.
Yeah. Hopefully everyone who's here wants to be here. Enjoys the time watching, listening. Again, I mentioned you can head over to the Going for Two Live YouTube page if you want to comment, interact with us in the chat section. There's also Twitch, Facebook. You can watch the videos on Twitter, but we can't see your Twitter comments in the feed. So if you do want to interact with us, do recommend that you head over to one of those other platforms. But I guess the first question, and this is not even just this season of Press Coverage, every iteration of Press Coverage always starts with the same question, but what are your first sports memories? So we're going to go all the way back.
So when I was a little kid, my father's an engineer and not huge into sports, but my first memories are he played in like an adult softball league and his company had tickets in Minnesota to the Twins. And so they're tickets for their clients were behind the backstop at the Metrodome. And so my earliest and fondest memories are my little brother and I and my dad going to the Metrodome and sitting in those tickets and the foul ball is popping back over the fencing that and over the netting. Those are like the earliest things that I can remember is like the occasional time. And we were by no means a family of means. Like we were kind of from a my dad's doing well now, but we weren't growing up. And so those were like really rare, like super happy moments. It was kind of like just pure, right? Like it was just a couple little kids with their dad going to the game. And it was really, that's my earliest memory. And that's some good runs, right? 87, 91, the Twins are winning the World Series. So it was like a good time to be a Twins fan. Those are the only times I've seen a team that I care about win a national championship in anything, actually.
So. I was going to say, yeah, didn't set unrealistic expectations to Minnesota fans. So.
Right, for sure. So. True story. We saw Chuck Knobloch's first game as a pro, if you remember that that player. So Chuck Knobloch, we saw his first game as a pro. We saw his first major league home run. So we had this weird affinity for Knobloch. Like years later when I was in college, he went through that weird case of the yips. Some of you might remember he was this like excellent fielder and he was like overthrowing first base and stuff like later in his career playing for the Yankees, sadly. But I was like, it was just crazy to like see him from like a – and then my family moved from Minnesota to Utah. And of all things, the AAA affiliate for the Twins was the buzz out there. So that was kind of nice. It was like we got to stay with the Twins fandom for a while.
A nice good buzz for you, yeah. There.
Yeah.
Got a few buzzwords we'll get back to. Really, reality, we'll get back to those buzzwords. But, you know, this is obviously there's real sports and real sports have implications. The you know wins and losses of those teams, but obviously from a fantasy perspective, we obviously love taking stats from those sports and applying it to our own teams and our own ability to manage. So, what were your first experiences with fantasy sports?
Yeah, I would say like many people, my first I've heard different analysts talk about how their first love was playing kind of franchise modes on video games, and that was true for me too. I think. The first time you could create players that like organized stats on like platforms like Sega Genesis and stuff, I was like, okay, like I'm in on this portion of the game. And then in the home run derby, oddly enough, my favorite player was Mark McGwire, which ended poorly in life. But nonetheless, I loved Mark McGwire. And so I would wake up and trace his stats like Visa, like the newspaper in the morning, like for that whole home run chase. But then the first true fantasy experience I got was my sophomore year of college. The home league started with guys both my grade and a year younger than me at university. That league's over 20 years out now, which dates me a little bit, but that's the home league still going strong. And yet once we were in on that, we were all in, you know. It was so great. You know, I had Dante Culpepper and Randy Moss and the league winner always had LaDainian Tomlinson. Like that was the era that we're talking about. So that's where we're at.
When running backs dominated, I guess Minnesota's had a pretty good running back dominate for a little bit too. It looks, appears to be returning to the team. That is Alexander Mattison we're talking about, of course.
That's the hope. I mean, I'm still cautiously optimistic they retain Dalvin but I think most Minnesota fans at this point have resigned themselves to the rebuild. But it's an odd time. I mean, you invite me on your program, you're a good man, and you're wearing this like terrible paraphernalia on your head. Like, well, you talk to me about it. But nonetheless, it's just weird for me when Aaron Rodgers finally leaves the division. Like, now is the time that we're resetting. And it seems like this is the open window. I don't know.
Coming off a division title for the Vikings themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, admittedly, they weren't a 13-3 team, but that was a crazy fun season with all those like those wins and the greatest comeback in NFL history. Like, look, I knew that they were punching above their weight a little bit, but it just feels, and I think they're doing the right thing, but gosh, it feels bad to do it when finally you don't have like an MVP in the league sitting across from you, you know? So.
And I will defend my choice of wardrobe by the fact that we're March. It was just St. Patrick's Day, so paying homage to the green there, I think, and you know, Luke Patrick coming on. I don't know. I thought that was me trying to be clever, but I was very well aware of the fact that it was also your division rival. So that was a happy mix, I guess.
Not. Yeah, well done, and I do appreciate like everybody. I mean, I genuinely lean into the shtick and like the Irish thing as a teacher and as a person, and I'm. I really love St. Patrick's Day. My favorite drink is an Irish car bomb, and I try to get people to do them with me. And it's like it's a fun. I'm glad that you lean into the Irish on St. Patrick's Day. I welcome everyone to the family. Everybody can be Irish for a day, right?
Yeah, I mean, any excuse I can have to wear Packers gear, of course. Yeah. Did you have a good St. Patrick's Day this year? Just a few days ago.
Totally. Very good time. It was much. I was with some parents that I like. It wasn't like I was away at this East Coast has a big soccer tournament. My daughter's a club soccer player, so I was with. Not like my closest friends, but these people were great, and we played it up a little bit to the extent that we could while we were Uber driving our children around to their sporting events. So that's the stage of life I'm in. So.
Yes, where the priorities are, but glad you could all have a good family time.
Yep.
So you mentioned teaching, and I guess that's what we'll get into next. So when did you get the first inclination that you wanted to teach?
Yeah, so Kyle, it's actually a pretty cool story. So I was in my university life, I was finishing up a master's degree in kind of an accelerated program. And my mentor in the program took me on spring break. It was supposed to be a bunch of us. We were all like, at this point, you know, we're all over 21. We're I was in a master's degree, like I said, and I was doing the grad work. And a bunch of my friends introduced me to this professor that I really admired, and we're sitting around having drinks, and he invited all of us to a conference in Assisi, Italy over spring break. And everybody's like, we're all in. And then one by one, they were like, it's spring break. We're all out. We're going to go like do like normal stuff. But I was like super nerdy and loved academia. And I was at a point in my life where I was like, yeah, I'd like to go see this conference. And I got to meet scholars from all over the world. And while I was sitting in Assisi, Italy, watching this mentor of mine present, a number of the people that he had introduced me to, one of the guys that I hit it off the most with was a Tanzanian scholar, and who was accepting a job in charge of a university in Lusaka, Zambia. And he was like, look, I need I need someone to come teach philosophy for me. And my mentor was sitting there and he was like, he's offering you a job. And I was like, well, I'd be like, I'm like, I would love to. So over gelato in Assisi, Italy, I got my first job. And that was my first inclination to teach too. I hadn't aspired to that. That wasn't what I intended to do. And that I just kind of fell in love from that moment with what I was doing. And I haven't looked back. That was the academic year of 2004-05. So I've been at this for now almost 20 years. So.
Oh, wow. Congrats. And I guess, you never know what'll just fall in your lap. You never know when the Eagles take Jalen Reagor and let you take Justin Jefferson. But when those opportunities come, you just seize them, right?
That is so aptly put. There, you know, my wife is from Philly, and many of my groomsmen are from Philly. Some of the best people I know in my life, and many of the worst people I know in my life, are from Philly. And so, the moments where, like, the only kind of thing I've been able to hold over them is that Jefferson pick. And then when we traded for Reagor, it was hilarious. Like, it was just
yeah, that is pretty funny.
I'm grateful for the opportunities that have come my way, and so much has kind of played out. And for my students, for anyone listening to us here, as now kind of as like an old head in the teaching game, I often tell them to aspire to be around people that you love and see what comes from that more than aspire to a specific kind of vocational outcome. Like, I've always tried to make decisions about placing myself near to people that I admire and people that from whom I can learn. And in every instance that I've chosen people over like other factors and other criteria, it's always kind of played out the way that you say. And so maybe it ties back to fantasy. I really enjoy you've played with me now for a while. I really, I play from the heart a little bit. Like, sometimes I pick players that I analytically don't believe in as much just because I think they're fun and like easy to cheer for. Like Juju Smith-Schuster is like a favorite, and like just like guys that I think are good, like Jamal Williams, that are like funny, like nice guys. Sometimes that overwhelms me, but like, and then obviously like go a little homer with the Vikings. And as you said, in fantasy it tends to work out. They tend to be much better in fantasy than reality, so that works out.
Yeah, I know they won't disappoint you as much. Unless you're all about reality, then I mean they will disappoint you. But the All About Reality podcast never disappoints. But just tying that, fantasy to reality, have you ever used fantasy sports or fantasy football as part of a lesson plan, as part of teaching?
I haven't explicitly, because my teaching is largely philosophy and it's largely theology based. And so if anything, I use it more, you might appreciate it. I use deprecating jokes about my own fandom and the Vikings to explain things like the problem of evil and suffering in the world. And I try to like set it up that way to like explain why like bad things happen to good people, and try to make those arguments a little bit and make them more intelligible and humanize them. And frankly, to make it those courses a little bit lighter, right? Because my jobs is to teach an introduction to theology course at the university level. And I'm teaching students of all different degrees of different faith traditions. They're coming from all over the world. Some of the kids are walking into the room like deeply atheistic. Some people are walking into the room agnostic. Some people are deeply faithful to different traditions like Islam or Judaism or different sects of Christianity. And so so it is part of what I have to do, and part of what I have to craft is like a common touch point and allowing them to see someone suffering for fandom actually humanizes it a little bit sometimes, and it makes it so it's not frankly so dark. And so so I've been grateful to fantasy for that for many reasons. I would argue that's the reason why fantasy has stayed in my life, because a lot of the stuff that I talk about with students that I care about very much is quite heavy. And so sometimes the fact that you and I can have these conversations and there's just such levity to it, and the drama of it is so fun and not not as impactful to the point of pain. Like, it's like that fantasy is a deep release in my life for that reason.
So there we go. We've tons of purposes for the Vikings specifically, whether it's, you know, to use them as a lesson in what is suffering. I guess, you know, listening to the All About Reality podcast coming back for season 6, I believe. I just had that premiere episode, and apparently that Vikings comeback win is what convinced Goody, one of your co-hosts, to remain in the listener league. So, you know, the Vikings did so much good this year, apparently. So useful.
They did. Yes, they are. They certainly provide a never-ending drama for me. That's like a subtext of bigger dramas in the life. But yeah, man, and you can attest to this, right? Like, I mean, I should speak to you, right? Like, there is a sense of loss, right? I would imagine when, like, a player as good as Aaron Rodgers leaves and, like, does it in the manner that, like, I mean, I would imagine he was easy to cheer for and he's easy for the rest of us to, like, to pile on. But, right, like, you defend, like, part of fandom is, like, taking in someone in a familial way. You, like, defend them in all their eccentricity and, like, the whole bit. And so, but it's also super exciting. You have a new first-round pick that you've, like, groomed for 3 years to, like, actually start. That's, like, very rare in today's NFL. Like, it's fun stuff. Like, it's just, like, I mean, like, you could speak to that for a second. Like, I don't even know what the Vikings, like, if they're going to do the same for Kirk. Like, if they're going to draft someone meaningful this year or if they're going to trade for Lamar Jackson. But, like, are you excited about the prospect of a Jordan Love season at this point?
I guess my hope for a Super Bowl victory with Jordan Love is not so strong. So I guess that's the unknown, like, how good could he be is the exciting part. But it's the, well, if the limit is there and he isn't that good, that reality is not so exciting, I think. So just coming to grips with that. But I will say, I think it's quite funny. I haven't thought about this, but it's almost poetic in a way. A, like, you know, because you just said it, how many quarterbacks have been able to sit for 3 years? Like Patrick Mahomes sat for 1 year. That was, like, they could not, he was too good to leave on the bench any longer than that. I don't think Jordan Love's quite that good, but I believe the last quarterback to sit that long and to have success is Aaron Rodgers himself. So I would say the blueprint or the green print done by the Packers. So, and it's also funny because, you know, as much as I'm an NFL fan, I am Canadian and big CFL fan, and the Hamilton Tigercats just traded for a quarterback in his 30s, you know, earlier 30s than Rodgers, former league MVP, former league champion, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So it's funny how my other team is kind of going on the opposite end of the cycle, almost like they're trading Aaron Rodgers to the Ticats. And yeah, so I just found that funny how you get the one young guy, and Hamilton last year went with the 20-something-year-old quarterback. He fumbled way too much, didn't win enough games, and okay, now let's go get the trade for the proven vet. So yeah, because Calgary is moving on from Bo Levi Mitchell with their young new quarterback that they just drafted and groomed for a couple of years. So the cyclical life across both leagues is funny. So I guess good luck, Jets. Exactly. We can talk about franchises that have suffered, right?
Now talk to me. Is there a thriving, because, like, there's a lot of Canadian cats that are playing on Reality Sports Online. Like, I've had, like, some of the best rivalries. Like, is there a thriving CFL, like, fantasy scene? Because it seems like there should be. There's a lot of smart Canadian fantasy players.
I mean, I would. Here's the thing. I'm one of the few Canadians who actually watches the CFL. Like, I know tons of my friends in Canada who don't care at all. I bet, like, a lot of those analysts who you talk about that are Canadian and doing fantasy football stuff, probably most of them aren't into the CFL. I also think because there are so few teams, it's tough to do traditional season-long fantasy. DFS definitely exists, and so I think that makes less rivalry between, you know, participants in a sense. You're not league mates, but that would be the one aspect of that could help grow the league, is the, you know, the popularity and growing of DFS.
For sure.
Because I, you know, part of actually good transition, goingfor2.com, website, which allows us to host everything here at Going for Two Live, founded by Jeff Lambert. During the summers and falls, I'll usually write DFS articles for CFL weekly. So season starts usually mid-June. So you can look for those on goingfor2.com coming in June.
Awesome. And we'll point all my, like, followers to the extent that I can at Fantasy Doc Ock on Twitter, like DOCOC, like. But yeah, I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's fun, right? You make these connections. I love to travel, and I've never gotten to see a CFL stadium. It would be pretty cool. I've only been over the border in kind of like immediate senses to Canada. Well, that's not like true totally, but like at Niagara Falls, I went over the border. But then like my best friends and I took a trip post graduation around the United States, and every 5 years we get back together. And on two of those 5 year anniversaries, one we did a bunch of Canadian provinces, and then the other we went did the cruise up to Alaska and landed in Victoria on the way back. So like there's been some Canadian adventures amongst my best friends and I too, but never to a CFL game. So
That's okay. Three downs, not four. That's basically the biggest one. But
fair enough. Fair enough.
yes, I've got some questions down. We can keep going with that. And one of the things I wanted to ask you is, who have been your biggest influences so far in your life? And that could be sports, that could be fantasy, that could be teaching, could be anything, something different.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple the biggest ones are, because as a teacher anyway, the biggest ones are a couple scholars that are priests too, that got me that connection to Zambia and started me on my teaching career. One's this great priest, the one that I should like the biggest influence in my life probably is this great guy. He's a son of Jamaican immigrants. Brilliant, speaks multiple languages, lives in Brooklyn, New York, and he's just one of these like the most charismatic humans that I've ever met in my life. He's just like just a massive presence in every way. He's like as wide as he is tall, and just when he enters a room, he lights it up, and like everybody wants to be his friend. And I've seen him like just be present to and like converse with and bring the best out of like an individual who was like struggling with homelessness that came to his rectory door. And to like pop stars that are still like have known him and come to him for like for help. And see, he just amazes me and is someone I aspire to be like, because he's one of these rare people that when you're speaking to him, it feels as if you're the only person that matters. And I've done my best as a teacher in my best moments to try to adopt that posture towards my students that are in front of me, is that they that to like recognize their own attempts to grow as scholars to the extent that they can, their need as people to be recognized and to like be seen. And I found over the nearly 20 years of teaching, that is the only kind of part of the game that hasn't changed. My relationship to them has changed. I'm much more fatherly now than when I started. I was like, only a couple years older than them when I started teaching. And now but just to like let them know that they're being seen, being heard, look them in the eye, try to draw out of them things of meaning and not just let them retreat into the devices that allow us to retreat from one another sometimes. Like those parts of it, I wish I could say I learned anywhere else, but that they learned, I learned from that mentor. He's just a really good man. If you guys ever get to New York, his name's Father Black, and he's like rocking, and he's just a good man. Like one of like these movie characters come to life. He's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you, Father Black, for that influence. And really, I mean, you said, it helps you for the teaching profession. Really, that could be something that anyone, teacher or not, can take, is just, to be present with someone when you're there, and to make, any interaction you have with them the most important in that moment. And then, yeah, we can cherish all those moments together. Like, we're cherishing these moments. Again, I appreciate you coming on, Luke.
Yeah, no, thanks for saying so. And yeah, and that's the other big influence, and to this speaks to, you've asked me like off air and like and prepared me for this a little bit with like one thing that people don't know, and what I've been touched by in the fantasy community is the kind of rallying that people do for one another. But I became more deeply interested in the analyst side and like doing the podcast and the whole bit. And frankly, more deeply invested in fantasy, because one of those guys that was in my home league, and one of my groomsmen, the godfather to my oldest daughter, he got hit with a real brutal form of leukemia 8 years ago. And when and ultimately that leukemia like took his life. And that's like a tough thing to always what they don't prepare us for, right, as teachers and as fathers and like as adults, is how you move forward with that, like as a man and like as someone who just misses your buddy. And yet you're showing up every day to like be there for the people that you care about, like your wife, your children, your best friends that are also going through it, like the your students that need you on the job. Like if you have another job that's not a teacher, like you're expected to like do your thing. And I just don't think people often address that. And this is where fantasy became so beautiful to me, is because it really did provide that total release valve. Like I could come on here and talk like to you about Justin Jefferson and about Aaron Rodgers, and the stakes were only just like pure fun. And that's like, and that was something that my buddy and I shared. His love of sports was inordinate. Like I would tease him about it. He would watch everything from golf to like to baseball to like the whole just run the gamut. If cricket was on at like 3 in the morning, he'd be watching that. We would watch Australian rules football, and he was literally like a prodigy, like a math genius. So he could get away with a lot of that that the rest of us couldn't, because he had just excess amount of free time, because he could just do tasks for reality in short order that the rest of us took longer. But like it's always going to be in my mind affiliated to that friendship, and that like fantasy will always remind me, in short, this is the thing that I suppose nobody knew, will always remind me of the more innocent parts of my life when those obligations were less and it was just my buddies and I like goofing around. And I think maybe that's true for a lot of us, right? Like it's a moment of just kind of unadulterated playfulness, and I hope that's true for a lot of the people listening to us now.
Well, especially coming from a content creation standpoint, because not only are you enjoying playing fantasy football, but then talking about it, and it just, the joy from it multiplies beyond that, all the interactions you have because of just the simple game you're playing, but like the ripple effects of just playing the game, so many meaningful interactions.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, like, look, you and I mean, we play in that league with Graham Barfield, and I was at Canton, like this summer, and there's all these like big names around. And just one night, like I just like bump into Graham, we're hitting it off, and he needed to ride home, and so like I'm just driving this guy who like I think the world of his analysis, but like, and we play in a league together. But you're right, like those kind of like I wouldn't have a touchstone to make those kind of relational connections, which like frankly, as I've already stated, which I think life is all about anyway, right? It's fun to have friends that are just totally rooted in complete joy, kind of levity, just like goofing around. Frankly, I hope everybody has something like that, that they can just find that complete, like just go play. Like it's good to be childlike sometimes. And frankly, as you say, the content creation gives you the chance to put your stamp on it, to like to let other people know that you are playing, and that it's fun to play, and like and frankly, like I mean, I loved the video even coming in, right? Like I've never done like anything like the audiovisual graphic side of it, and that's just me being like, can I devote that time away from the fam to do it? But now I'm kind of like inspired. I'm like, that was a nice hot drop coming in. I liked your style, so like
Well, that's all Jeff. So, shout out to Jeff Lambert for all that, for setting us up. And just I just have to click the buttons and then talk afterwards. So I'm good at doing the stuff like that. Click buttons, right? That's RSO. Like all the going to contracts tabs. It's a lot of button clicking.
Just keep jacking up those salaries for other people. Yeah.
Yeah, make those franchise tag amounts tough. So I
Yeah.
got to pay a lot for this guy. So yeah, so I guess you transitioned really well from the influences to the one thing no one knew about you in the community. So one last question before we get to more fantasy specific talk, not that we haven't sprinkled it throughout everything already, but outside of fantasy and sports, do you have any other hobbies?
Yeah, I don't know if people characterize this as a hobby per se, but my great love is travel and travel for leisure. And so I've been to over 40 countries, and I just really, whenever I can, at the drop of my head, I go see something new. And this summer, I hope that takes me to Australia and New Zealand. That's kind of the aspiration, to see some of the Women's World Cup and hopefully bring one or more of my daughters along for the ride. And I've got a friend from Melbourne that I haven't seen in years, like since pre-COVID and stuff. So like that's yeah, that's the I mean that I to the extent that that occupies my time, I think planning those trips, thinking about those trips, otherwise is probably the closest a dad with multiple jobs and multiple children gets to a hobby, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and I guess having the children, your hobbies that you can incorporate time with your children probably, take precedence of priority.
Yeah, for that's the hope, right? I mean, it's really cool. The other fun thing would be, and I think there's some overlap in our community too. I like mini nerdy things, and so I'm big into like comic books, and one of my buddies is an editor at Marvel, and there's a DC Comic Con coming up where the actor Billy Dee Williams, who played Lando Calrissian in Star Wars, is going to be there, and I like proposed. I was like, look, here's how I proposed to use concepts from graphic novels in my courses, and they accepted me. So now I have like a professional pass. I just got this today, actually. So I have a pro pass to go to like the comic book convention, which I've never done before. So like as a professional, as a professional educator, they're gonna let me like sit in on these panels and stuff. And I'm like, all right, I'm like, that's cool. That's like a nerdy cool moment for sure.
Yeah. Awesome. You must be like riding on Cloud City entirely, not just Cloud Nine, but entire City of Clouds.
Well played, Kyle. Yeah, for sure. So
Thank you.
yeah, Empire Strikes Back, Cloud City, like that could come up later in our discussion for sure. So.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, in case people didn't know, I'm a nerd too, Luke. So yeah, Luke's definitely a nerd. If you didn't notice his, I guess not on the screen, but his Twitter handle at Fantasy Doc Ock. So when your Twitter handle is a Spider-Man villain, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good illusion that you caught too, right? Like, 'cause so that's not everybody does.
Well, I'm really nerdy, so I go instantly to stuff like that. But yes. Well, I think I already know the answer to this, and that's gonna, I think, help create further discussion. But we get to the fantasy football questions now. So, what is your preferred league format of fantasy?
Yeah, I mean, as the great Matthew Berry always says, I'm a company man, and but truly, Reality Sports Online has been wonderful since one of my best friends invited that home league to come play it. And it was too complex for some, like many of our home leagues, they were like, oh, I can't do this because they never gave it a shot. Not because it's actually too complex, but just because they were daunted. But then the rest of us went, loved it. So now we have multiple leagues on it. So Reality Sports Online, for any of your listeners that hasn't heard the pitch before, it just incorporates like a draft auction with salaries, and then it allows you to function as like a general manager, where it just adds the component of the actual NFL salary cap rising every year. So you have to make trades to like clear cap. You have to make trades to like honor not only the integrity of the best players, but you got to make sure that you've got leaving enough room to like do proper roster builds. It's been a game changer for me with fantasy, and I still like other formats and play across a gamut of formats. But Reality Sports Online is where the heart is. Home's where the heart is. And so if anyone ever gets a chance to do it, check it out. There's a free kind of like test auction, so you can look at it and see how the algorithm works and see how the agent negotiates with you on behalf of the player. And yeah, it's just so much fun, as you know, and as we're in a league together. So yeah, no doubt in my mind, Reality Sports Online is my favorite format so far.
Yeah, there's really no doubt in my mind that was going to be your answer, but the best sell I find for any salary cap contract leagues, but specifically RSO, is, man, everyone loves drafting, right? So what better way than to have not just a rookie draft, but an auction draft every year? So you get two drafts per year per league. So that's all the more the merrier.
It's so fun. You're so right. And it just like, and especially because you get the magnitude of that first draft, that takes a while. But then every year it's kind of, you pop in, you get to be there with your friends, you get to like, invariably there's like two or three big names like that are on the block, and like everybody's jockeying for position and jockeying for salary ahead of time, generates a lot of trade action, which I think other than the auction, those interactions building around trades is the best part of fantasy football. So like, yeah, like I literally have pulled in friends that I had lost contact with from high school and said, like, hey, here's the pitch. Here's why this is active year round. You're a good sports fan. Like, we'll have cause to like reach out to each other in like a random February or March day. And that's proven true. I've kept in touch with guys that I otherwise wouldn't have.
Yeah, it's really, really something, reality sports. So yeah, definitely, yeah, recommend everyone check that out. Because, well, yeah, you just kind of referenced trades, because I think a lot of people would say when they're answering that question, what's your favorite league format? Dynasty would be a popular answer, and I think a lot of people love trading in Dynasty. And I think going from redraft to dynasty, you have that where, because in redraft you can trade, but you're both, you know, all teams are essentially trading for the same thing, trying to predict what players will score more points. And so that could kind of complicate things because everyone's only trying to trade into one direction. So finding trade partners could be difficult. At least with dynasty, you've got the points and then the rebuild, the picks, right? So you've got moving in opposite directions. You can find teams that, you know, could coexist to create that trading relationship. But then you mentioned it, teams trading for cap space, teams making moves simply, you know, for cap space. And not that it's something you can't physically trade for the cap space itself in RSO, but still there might be some trades that are motivated simply by cap space. So you've got this entire third dimension that can, yes, the sometimes the salary can complicate the trades, but it can also make it so that sometimes that's how the trade even starts in the first place. So you've got a third dimension. So I also think for people who love to trade, you've got that extra dimension an aspect to trade for. You can trade for points, you can trade for picks, you can trade for cap space, or some combination of all three.
For sure. And I think that's where people think it's going to be complicated, but it's not, right? Like in an RSO league, for example, if I knew you were a contender and I was just trying to get some building blocks on my team, like, and we knew that of all the players at auction that this season, that, like, say someone of significance, like Justin Jefferson, was like the only like real standout that's available at auction, I might go to you and be like, all right, Kyle's going to win this thing, or he has a good shot at winning this thing. I have Austin Eckler, who's on like a $30, $35 million per year contract. I'm going to offer him Eckler for some like marginal player, like a Madison on a 1 or 2 year, $1 million or $2 million contract, because that is a twofold benefit for me. Like you are more likely to accept it because it helps you advance your title hopes. It also, like you said, we're going different directions. I'm now trying to clear up $35 million of cap along with whatever else I may have, knowing that it's going to cost me an arm and a leg to secure that player that I want. And so that's the beauty of it, because like it does, that third dimension allows you to think through, like, okay, yes, no one in their right mind in any dynasty league would trade Austin Eckler for Alexander Madison, but many people might consider what that would look like if you were trading Austin Eckler for Justin Jefferson. And that's just kind of it's a little bit more chess than checkers, and it's a lot of fun because of it.
It's funny, cause I had a league like that and we're name dropping a little bit. I'll name drop Sal Lido, who's in our Friends of Reality League. And I did exactly that to Sal, in a sense. It almost came back to bite me, actually, because I ended up playing him in the finals that year. But traded him away Cortland Sutton for a third. And this was, I believe it was him coming, you know, had just torn his ACL, or was the season after recovering. But at that point, his value probably wasn't that, like in a dynasty league, that'd be a smash except for anyone buying at that price. Like, oh, yeah, he's probably worth a second. But I remember in that, at that point, before the auction, Sal had so much more cap space than everyone else that he'd be able to go. I think, you know, Antonio Gibson was the big name free agent. And I guess now I look at it and, oh, I have a $45 million cap hit with Antonio Gibson this year and next year. Maybe that wasn't so good to go all in on him in the auction. But that idea was, I'm going to trade this to Sal at a price where, oh, of course I'll accept Cortland Sutton for a third. But then the inherent value for me was not just freeing up I think it was $13 million of cap space, you know, off the books for me, but my direct competitor also gains $13 million onto their cap space, or I guess onto their salary cap and losing that space. So it almost made like a $26 million swing in the difference between our cap spaces. And it got it to a point where I could go buy Antonio Gibson, I could go buy Justin Herbert. Actually, that was it, because I spent so much on Gibson, I couldn't do anything else, but at least I got Gibson. So, but yeah, that exact idea where, you know, underselling the player on the value because you're getting inherent value somewhere else with it in liberating the contract.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Yeah, anybody that can get a chance to get after it, it's a format that it makes you think, but it's so fun. It keeps you like, and again, there's just so many reasons to trade. It's not just to, like, win this year or win next year, but there's like these dynamics where you're freeing things up, or when you want rookie contracts. Some guys want to hoard rookie contracts. Some GMs are just really clever about flipping their picks at value for like for veteran players. One of our listeners, Ashley, is like one of the best that I've seen at that. She's like, she waits till the rookie fever is at its pitch and then goes and stocks up her team every year. Like it's just fascinating with guys that are undervalued, like last year, like the Josh Jacobs of the world. Like she has a pretty uncanny knack for doing that. It's again, it's not, I don't have that knack of like picking the right veteran going into that. So I shy away from that strategy and try to build through the rookie drafts. But again, you can do what you want. There's multiple drafts, put different points of the year, and it keeps you moving, keeps the off season fun.
So what is one rule that you feel like you have to have in every league you're in?
Yeah, that was a good question when you put this up for me and put it to me. And I think honestly for me, the biggest rule is I hate having to wait for trade approvals because I like trades so much. So I am really reticent to join any league where there's trade vetoes. I'm actually like, I'm anti-trade veto unless it's like something egregious. I just, the horror stories of guys that and women who've like dealt with like just like leagues giving arbitrary reasons why their trades wouldn't be accepted is just crazy. So it seems like a cop-out, but I am like any league that had a trade veto, I'd bounce on that. Like it's almost like an anti-rule that I favor.
It's funny because sometimes the guests will ask me my answers as well. Like, well, what's yours, Kyle? And that would be actually be my answer. If I like envisioning, if I were to answer this, I would say, yeah, the absence of trade vetoes has to be the one rule. And I think to me, it is, you brought it up. It's the delay, right? It's the waiting. Like to me, I don't care. Okay, you want to approve, disapprove. But then it's the fact that I have to actually wait for you to approve or disapprove. That's probably the most annoying part is just because, you know, you might be limited on when you can make trades. You might not be able to make a trade on a Sunday morning when you both get up and like, this player's out. I really want to win this week. I'm going to trade for somebody. Like those types of last minute before kickoff trades are, you're super limiting. And I don't really like any rules that limit the activity, that manager's ability to make moves.
Absolutely. It's we're here to play a game. People forget that. And I even make bad trades sometimes just because I'm like bored, like as good players do, like, right. Or I shouldn't say good players, but players who are seeking a game for fun. Right. And not necessarily, I'm not like a DFS bro and just grinding all the time or something. Right. I actually like want to play a game for fun, but though, as you've seen, like I try to trade a lot, like, and sometimes that helps you win and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sure everyone can go back and put out like the best of trades and the worst of trades, and they'll be just as extreme on both ends. But we'll go extreme on the good end for this question. So who are your all-time favorite, or I shouldn't pose like that. Your all-time fantasy QB1, RB1, wide receiver 1, and tight end 1. That can be favorite, that can be production, however you choose to interpret the question.
Sure, absolutely. Early getting into fantasy, the quarterback one was easy, oddly enough. I had this epiphany one season when I was preparing. There was this correlation between quarterbacks improving their scoring dramatically when facing easy schedules. And it's like, again, that wasn't like deeply insightful, but it was like, I was, you know, young and new to it, only like a few years into fantasy. And I was just doing a normal auction. It was a yearly draft with that home league. And I was like, Peyton Manning, the Bronco trade happens, and I'm like, Peyton Manning has like the easiest schedule ever for fantasy this year, and it's Peyton Manning with some significant weapons. And so I ended up, I would never spend more than like $1 or $2 on quarterback, and I spent a little bit more in one of those $200 auctions on Peyton Manning. I loved it. I mean, that season was so fun. He was just lighting everything up. He was, you know, the records were being set. It was a fun moment. The Vikings homer comes out in me for the next two. Adrian Peterson's like one of my all-time favorite players in fantasy and in reality. And again, it's tough, right? Like this is the tough part for boys and girls too, as you listen. The guy that I looked up to as a little kid and got to physically meet walking around Alameda County Stadium in Oakland once was Mark McGwire. And man, that turned out poorly in terms of like how that like the whole like everything, right? Like cheating, steroids, a little bit. And then you know, my whole aspiration is to root for good guys and not have like Adrian's turned out to have some real question marks in how he interacts with people and children in particular. It's so frustrating for me. But yes, Adrian Peterson, number one at the running back position. That's my favorite position. Two, I played a little bit in D3 and like loved playing football and playing running back. So that was fun.
My first year in fantasy was AP's 2,000-yard season. So that was quite the introduction to what fantasy football is.
Yeah, it's just so much fun. And then Randy Moss during the Culpepper years was so much fun as a wide receiver.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Kyle Rudolph. Okay, sorry. Yeah, Randy Moss. No, he mentioned you.
Kyle Rudolph, like, fun in his own right for sure. Actually, oddly enough, Antonio Gates was my big tight end pull. Like, he was just so perennially a winner. It was on some winning championship teams for me, and so that's my, like, he was one of the first ones that made tight end relevant, and so I just like that guy. So those were like the older polls for sure, but they have remained fun for me. And now Justin Jefferson, right? Like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well, that was the one thing in all seriousness. Okay, is he going to go Moss? Is he going to go Jefferson? Where's he doing with this wide receiver one? But yeah, I suppose maybe in a couple of years you might say Jefferson.
I mean, it's hard not to. If they watching AP run was indeed so much fun. McGee, way to hop in on that. You're so right.
I was gonna say it's basically like the name, bam.
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, it's just so like one of my best friends. He mocks me, but like whenever both of us are like getting mad or like losing our minds over fantasy, like to cheer me up, he'll just send me like AP highlight reels sometimes, and I'll be like, okay, like that calms me down. Like it's very cathartic. So that's my crew. Any stand out to you as meaningful like on there? Or do you have it? I actually want to hear your running back. Like, I always want to hear other people's running backs. So who's your all-time running back?
It'd be really tough to not be McCaffrey.
Okay.
I've won a lot of leagues with McCaffrey. And just under that guise, I think the player I've tracked, this, the player I've won the most leagues with is Mark Andrews. So he would probably be my answer at tight end just because of the volume of leagues I've won with him. He was that, especially his second year, his true breakout year. It seemed like it was such an easy thing to pick out where was drafting Mark Andrews and drafting Lamar Jackson that year.
Yeah.
They were just such, you know, the correlation was so easy and obvious, and both were going so far in drafts that Lamar Jackson wins the MVP. Mark Andrews finishes the top three tight end. So there's definitely some leagues that if you took McCaffrey that year too, like you're really, I'm pretty sure I did have a team with all three that won that, in that 2019 year. So yeah.
Yeah, McCaffrey was always too. I think he was always too pricey relative to where I was at. But I'm with you. I had ended up with an awful lot of Mark Andrews for a while there, and have been pleased with it. Now, talk to me. Put our analyst hats on here for a second. Is he your like? For many people, he's like a tier by himself, number two tight end in Dynasty in particular. Is that where you have him situated?
I wouldn't go tier by himself. But I think, you know, him and Hawkinson especially, I kind of like as that tight end two and three behind. Well, I think it's super obvious who everyone has as the tight end one still in Dynasty, Travis Kelce.
I'm glad you said Travis Kelce. I was worried that you were like, so I'm a big Pitts fan, but I too have Kelce clearly far and away number one. And then
see, I like Kyle Rudolph more than Kyle Pitts. So, and I don't really like Kyle Rudolph that much.
Fair enough.
I need to see it first with Pitts. My thinking is he's already being valued. I mean, in most people's rankings, he is the Dynasty tight end one. So that was half joking me saying that, because I think that's how most people would rank it, not like how you and I rank it with Kelce. But I think that idea of if Pitts ever ascends to that, he's probably not going to be that much more expensive than he's already been. Like, he's almost been his entire time in the NFL, he's been priced at a ceiling. So if he ever hits that ceiling production wise, I'll be fine buying in then, because I guess the risk is that just that person's never willing to sell. Once he hits that whoever has him just isn't willing to sell them. But like in my mind, like, okay, I'll just, you know, I still play redraft league. So once Pitts ascends and actually hits, I'll just draft him in redraft. I don't need him in Dynasty. So yeah, so I definitely prefer to, I think Hawkinson will be a guy I had a ton in redraft last year, and I think it might flip to, I might have a lot of him in Dynasty this year, but we'll have to see. But yeah, I think right now Hawkinson is my tight end two in Dynasty, and Andrews at three.
Fair enough. I mean, I obviously will not complain about that if that happens in reality. That's a good thing for my boys, but we'll see.
And I think for Hawkinson, like the so far free agency, like not that he necessarily is a massive winner, but nothing bad has happened to him, right? They've got rid of Adam Thielen. They haven't really brought in any other competition there. Kind of looks like he's locked in to be number two on that team and targets pretty easily. So that seems like it's a good role to have in that offense. And you know, he's young, athletic guy that can kind of still get, you know, good yards after the catch, so it can kind of make the most of those big targets. So,
yeah, you're right. There's some Vikings analysts that were saying that the whole team should be built around Darisaw and Justin Jefferson, and they put Hawk in the mix too. And I was like, that's a bold assertion to put him with those other two, to be honest, with your left tackle and your all-world wide receiver. But yeah, Hawk definitely he brought a spark. It was like really fun to watch when he came over. And I do hope he all functionally stepped into the wide receiver two role last year. And Thielen's one of my all-time favorite Vikings. Like it's hard to beat his story and just to see what that kid did coming out of Mankato State. Like, I mean, what, no one had even heard of that. He walked on for his home team. Like, I mean,
it's funny because he followed the Brandon Zylstra path and went to the Panthers after.
Yeah, right.
As an undrafted guy who used to play at the University of Minnesota. So, well, actually, I don't know if he went to University of Minnesota, but I know the Zylstras are from Minnesota, I
believe. Yeah, it's a university. It is a part of the University of Minnesota system, but it's even smaller. It's like it was called Mankato State at the time. It was just like okay. This tiny little. It's like the most obscure. Ironically, though, that was the town at the time that the Vikings hosted their training camp. So he walked across the street from his college. Like his college field was where the Vikings train. It's like it was just this obscure little rural Minnesota town. So
yeah, and I guess another CFL connection, because before he actually did sign with the Vikings, Zylstra played 2 years for Edmonton in the CFL. So
yes. So I mean, Minnesota's half Canada anyway, right? Like it's
I've heard that some people say that Canada South, or I mean it's almost, I mean parts of Ontario like Windsor are further south than most of Minnesota, so yeah. For them they'd say Canada North, but yes, I guess we're getting to the final portion of the show, the high five section. So we're going to talk about the top five from five different categories. So Luke, we'll start with the top five artists or bands, or your top five artists or bands.
All right, number five, I'm coming in with Peter Cetera, who wrote the greatest song ever, The Glory of Love, on the Karate Kid 3 soundtrack. Number four, Shakira. Number three, Aerosmith. Two, Bruce Springsteen. And number one, controversially, the greatest band from New Jersey, Bon Jovi. So that's my top five.
I feel like that's what most people say is the best band from New Jersey, to be fair. So that's what I was going to guess. Oh, is he going to say Bon Jovi? Oh, he is. Okay, so that's not too much controversy there, but I don't know. Maybe I missed something.
Well, people give me a hard time because like Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band.
Oh, right, yeah.
Would say, right? And I love Bruce, but like, yeah.
I guess you could say, oh, Bruce Springsteen's the best singer from New Jersey and Bon Jovi's the best band from New Jersey, and both will always still apply and you'll still always be good.
Yeah, try to make everybody happy. See, you're a good man. You're trying to be amicable. I try to like stir the pot, you know?
All right. Controversy everywhere. Yes. Top five favorite books.
Yeah, so there was a little bit different. Number five, I was coming in with the Nicomachean Ethics. It's my favorite philosophical text. It's written by Aristotle a long time ago. It's like lecture notes on literally kind of like how to be good at life and live a moral life. So that was there. My favorite novel growing up was this fantasy novel that was like horror oriented too, called A Boy's Life, which is really like a kind of a pursuit of relationship and out of loneliness. And it was like really poignant to me growing up. The Bridge to Terabithia, if you go a little bit even further back, is this really like touching childhood tome. And then I would say the Lord of the Rings trilogy, if I can cheat a little bit, is at number two. Like the Lord of the Rings, that was when I was a kid and read it for the first time, I was like 12 or 13. And when I put the last book down, I started crying, but not because of the ending, but just because there was nothing left to read. I found it that beautiful. And then number one, The Brothers Karamazov, written by a thinker named Fyodor Dostoevsky, a novelist who like had this amazing life in his own right. And the book perhaps answers and asks philosophical questions in a way better than any philosopher that I've read. So those are my top five books.
And yes, you could use the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy as one. Well, because it's just so awesome, and B, I just let the guests answer however they want. So there's no cheating. The guest just gets their way.
Fair enough.
All right. So next up, top five movies.
All right. So at number five, I would have to go with probably like Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison, one of the Adam Sandler ones. That's like dating me, baby. But that's the kind of humor that like cracked me up for a long time. Like just a good comedy like that that would make me laugh. Number four is a documentary produced by some friends of mine called The Human Experience. It won a bunch of awards internationally, and if you haven't seen it, it's worth going to take a look at. So it's called The Human Experience, and it reflects on the human condition in a way that's really poignant and really beautiful, a really cool, just beautifully done documentary. Number three, for you sci-fi nerds out there, a movie called Gattaca. It was a 1997 film where Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman actually met, and then for Mark, in a more contemporary sense, to appeal to all of us, for if any of you are a Stranger Things fan, their daughter Maya Hawke, who exists because of the movie Gattaca, is on Stranger Things. She's and then number two is Braveheart, and number one is, and this is what I alluded to earlier that it might come up again, is the Star Wars film Empire Strikes Back, the greatest film ever made.
See, I flip between it being Empire Strikes Back and being The Two Towers or Return of the King, and really all three. So depends on, catch me in a mood. I might be more of a Star Wars mood. I might be more of a Lord of the Rings mood, to which is the best film ever. I think you've caught me on the mood where I'm more on the it's The Two Towers. But
yeah, those are so beautiful. And that's like, you know, I try to take these moments and watch these films with my kids, and my oldest just told me the other night, I bought her The Hobbit a while ago and she just read it. So I'm waiting for the moment to sit and watch. We try to, you know, we're not stringent about it, but we try to like have them read books before they watch the films. I want like to see what their imagination produces before they see someone else's imagination produce it. And yeah, I can't wait to watch those films again with my daughters next to me for sure.
Oh yeah, that's great. Yeah, part of you could, it's always fun to watch a movie by yourself, but you can make it a communal event or a family event. That's always great too. And like we do with sports, right? You know, everyone always love having people over watching sports and having the game day food. So what are your top five favorite game day foods?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty straightforward. I actually love, so list of these, some, so I have number five, I have chili dogs. They're so good. There's a restaurant here in DC where I'm at now that's called Ben's Chili Bowl that has a place in the stadium. A good chili dog will always get me. And then number four, cheese curds, like, which is unique to the Midwest. Actually, like, they're the best, I have to concede, in Wisconsin. So like if you could ever go there and get some cheese curds in the stadium, it's like a good thing to do. They're like squeaky cheese, some people would call them. If your listeners have never had them, it's just like a very unique, like non-cured cheese. I don't even know how to explain it, but if you can get them, if you can go to Wisconsin, it's worth the pilgrimage. And then three, nachos, just to be like fair. And then if I'm not in a stadium, then I would go with anything off the grill. I tend to like in my best moments make some really like nice steaks when I'm watching football or something, so that would be probably number two. And then number one, I always like a nice dark beer, preferably a stout or a porter, to go with the game.
So. It's funny because I'm sure everyone loves to drink beer during the game, but I don't think anyone's actually answered beer as the food. So take the chance and the shot.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't had Guinness, it's basically food. So
they almost have a record for it or something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, and this might be the favorite question I've ever asked on this show. So what are your top five favorite contracts that you've ever owned in the reality sports online format?
So the like four of them are easy, and then I'll spend some more time on the last one, but like Justin Jefferson on a rookie contract. Jonathan.
Yeah, as soon as you said four of them are easy, I'm like, okay, they're four rookie contracts.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that, to give you a sense, to give your listeners a sense, rookie contracts are prorated like they would be in the NFL. Like they're actually slotted in. So if you pick someone number one, they'll be like $7.5 million or something. If you pick someone number 12, then they're going to be closer to like $2.5 million, and the second round decreases. So
compare that to the $45 million some idiot will spend on Antonio Gibson, for instance.
That there you go. Hey, listen, I didn't fault you. Like that's advice I give.
He was the only good. It was him and Chase Claypool. They're only two good free agents, right? So that was like, okay, do whatever it takes.
Right, you take your swing. You know,
and I can always cut him if I need to, which might happen.
Amen, amen. You can cut, or like you can pay a first round pick and get him off your team. That's the other thing. Like you could.
I'd rather cut him. And that's the thing. I know. We can just talk strategy real quick before we finish this answer, but I know you're very much into that. You don't want any dead cap at all. You're willing to pay the rookie picks. You see, I never want to do, I'm not sacrificing rookie picks to save myself cap space. Cause to me, that's what the rookie picks are for. So I'll always just cut them and eat the dead cap rather than pay to have someone take the contract. So it's funny how we're very philosophically opposed, just to talk about philosophy.
Yeah. On that point, you're right. It makes for good trade partners between us. Cause I hate like any kind of dead cap on my list at all, but that's also because I found my hit rate, especially for those later picks, if I'm moving like seconds or third, they just don't matter to me. Like I just like don't hit on them enough to make them relevant to my life. Like I'm more aware of like existing players in the NFL. I tend to like call it right if they're gonna have a big season more than like a rookie. But so yeah, I'm with you though. I appreciate. Like I tend to like hoard the first round picks. I'm with you. I generally won't move those first to like get rid of the big contract. I'll just like eat it for a year if I have to. Like because I do think those first rounders are precious. They're a little bit easier to call the good ones, right? Like you can get closer to 50-50.
Yeah. So if you get a Justin Jefferson or a Jonathan Taylor on their rookie contracts, then of course that'd be why that you'd like them so much as contracts. So I'll let you finish your top five.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, the other. I mean, I'm in a 32 team league, and I drafted. I drafted Justin Herbert as a rookie. And so that, as you might imagine, for those of you who played Superflex, you know how like desperate people are for quarterbacks. Now imagine 32 teams where everybody needs a starting quarterback and there's no duplicates. So like that, like Justin Herbert becomes this enormous advantage on a rookie contract. So that was huge. And then, so those are, and then the last one would be, I think coming out of this, like this is just a plug for the pod, I guess, the All About Reality pod. But I had a really good discussion with one of our new co-hosts on there, Ryan Krawczyk, where I was like, you know, before the draft last year, everybody was like, had, and people forget this, that most people had Garrett Wilson as their number one wide receiver and shifted off that post NFL draft. And we had like a really long discussion, and I put a lot of people all back on to Garrett Wilson. It was one of my better moments where I was right, like, and there's a lot of wide receiver moments and swings and misses I would point you to when we go check my receipts. But I was like, this kid, like most of us were pretty sure about pre-draft. So like, I think we should pick talent over opportunity here. And so anybody now with him, right? Like he's either one or two out of that class now again. So I think that would be a good one. So like those four rookie four contracts. And then this has never happened to me before or since in Reality Sports Online, but in the auction draft in that Friends of Reality pod, in the very first one, and if I'm not mistaken, you weren't part of the league during the draft at its inception. Is that correct?
I was, yes. I remember I signed the first contract in the league. Zach Ertz was the first guy up.
No, you're right. So if you remember, a really weird moment happened in the draft where I was like, I'll nominate Deontay Johnson on that season where he was getting hyped up by a lot of analysts, and I was like, oh, he's going to be more expensive than for my taste, but it'll clear some money off the board. And no one bid on him, and he got on my team for $500,000. And I was like, which is the minimum contract for everybody, like it allows you to add or drop the player without cost. And I was like, what just happened? Like everybody else thought someone else was going to bid on him.
Yeah, it's always how it is. It's like, I don't really want that player. But I mean, if it's to get them to $1 million, like it really shouldn't matter. Yeah. And it's we all just let him slip. It seems like it happens maybe not once per auction, but at least once per league or, you know, a couple times in the league's history, you'll see it. I remember Justin Forsett coming off the big year with Baltimore. I did the same thing and caught everyone kind of almost sleeping. And I think you got a lot more production out of Deontay Johnson than I got out of Justin Forsett.
But those moments are good though, right? Like
Yeah.
they're just little W's that we got to take when we can get them. So.
Chief extension, or a little bit, maybe helps the chief extension afterwards. I would say that my favorite contract I've ever had is a again rookie contract, but a little bit of a deeper one than, I mean, most players you talked about were first, maybe second round picks. Cooper Kupp as a rookie, third round pick in the NFL draft, and a bit of an older prospect, not a profile a lot of people liked. I mean, even myself, I remember that draft. I had two third round picks, and I took Artavis Stewart with the first one, and then luckily Cooper Kupp fell. I think it was like four or five picks later to like the 309 or 310. So for 4 years having Cooper Kupp, and I mean, not wide receiver one production like we've seen recently, but his first 4 years in the NFL, there was a lot of really solid production. $800,000 as a cap hit. So those years, so I remember having that, and that was probably one of my favorite contracts I've ever
That's a
had.
lot of fun. That's a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, so I mean, this whole conversation was a lot of fun, Luke. So appreciate you for coming on, and I know we've already hinted at a few things, but you mentioned the All About Reality podcast, which again is part of Reality Sports Online. So feel free to hype that up as much as you want and let people know. I would guess we already have shared your Twitter handle, but you can share it again if you'd like.
I'm always happy to talk people and talk people through this. Come check out Reality Sports Online. And my Twitter handle is at Fantasy Doc Ock. My co-hosts Ryan Krawczyk and Matt Goodwin. Goody and I have been at this for 5 seasons already. We're bringing Ryan on board just so we can get some more regularity. Our listeners have been really great about asking for some more regularity, and so we're gonna try to do it bi-weekly for Reality Sports Online on Sunday nights. And so we'll get some instant feedback. We'll give you feedback in the off season about big moments in the off season, but then like during the season too. And so yeah, man, it's been a real pleasure, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. And I hope everybody like was able to walk away from this knowing that there's some meaning and some poignance to like to any interaction that any of you get to have. Like I'm rooting for you, and I hope that fantasy provides a space and a thing for you to like, just like get real joy in life. Like there are moments in this particular game that we play of just pure silliness, and it helps bridge some divides that otherwise don't get bridged. So, Reality Sports Online, but any fantasy platform that you go to, know that I'm rooting for you.
So you're technically a theologist and positively a philosopher, but I truly appreciate your positive philosophy. So I think hopefully your listeners gain that as well as all the technical stuff and talking about Reality Sports Online, a format we both really like.
All right, brother. Thank you so much. It was a great night.
Yeah, so again, this was Luke Patrick, again from the All About Reality podcast, and I want to appreciate, or I want to thank, and I do appreciate everyone who watched and listened, whether it's live or after the fact on the Going For Two YouTube page. I never did the underground promo. I'm going to do that right now. So we have a promo code. If you want to join Underdog, I was getting so into the conversation, completely forgot about this. But yes, Underdog promo. So if you have not yet joined the Underdog website, you can do so by using the promo code GF2, and you will get a double deposit match up to $100. There's also a QR code here on screen for anyone watching live or again after the fact. But yes, or again, type in the promo code GF2, capital G. I guess usually I'm wearing a Going For Two hat. There is still a G on this hat, but just no F2 or F1. I'm not really a racing guy, but yes, not to race through this Underdog promo at the end, but I don't want to keep Luca too much. But again, really appreciate this, Luke. Thank you so much for this.
All right, man. Good night. Be well to all your listeners.
Yes, thank you. I know Bam was in the chat live. Appreciate that, Bam. Appreciate Luke, appreciate Jeff Lambert, of course, for giving the platform here. Once again, I'm Kyle Senra, and this was another episode of Press Coverage. Tune in 2 weeks from now. My guest will be Matt Hicks, and it'll be on April 3rd. So see you, Luke, and see you, everyone. Bye.